Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Curse on Film podcast. This week we'll be discussing Léonore Serrailles' Camera d'Or winning debut feature, Jeune Femme. I'm Sam Howlett, and joining me to discuss the film this week are two jeune femmes and one jeune homme, Kelly Powell.
Hello.
Steph Watts.
Bonjour.
And Campbell Campbell.
Damn, you beat me to it. Hello.
Yeah, so the whole episode is going to be in French from here on. Everyone ready?
Yes.
Oui.
So the jeune femme of the title of the film is Paula, played by Letitia Dosh. Fresh from an unceremonious dumping by her boyfriend of 10 years, she finds herself wandering the streets of Paris, jobless, homeless, and single, with no idea of what life holds for her next. At 31 years old, with little to show for it but a kidnapped cat and a sense of adventure, she sets out to reinvent herself. New job, new friends, new life, and finds that these things never do come easily. So let's start with perhaps the most important character in the film, young up-and-coming actress who grabs our attention from the first shot she's in, Muchacho the Cat.
Oh, yeah.
How does it rank in your overall rankings of best movie cats?
It's up there. It's definitely up there.
Top 10, I think.
Mm. Okay.
A little, I don't know, hams it up a bit. Sometimes overreaches.
Scenery chewing.
Good debut, though, all in all.
Yeah, strong. Yeah, strong impression. Mm.
Good. I think up there with Ulysses the Cat from Inside Llewyn Davis.
I was literally about to say the same thing. Good movie cat.
Great movie cat.
Potentially the best.
But this is really Letitia Dosh's film. She's in every scene. It feels like she's in every shot as well. What did we think of her in the film? What do we think of her performance, of her character?
I think that the film's success almost completely hinges on her. She's really amazing and carries the whole thing really well. And it feels like it feels really unique to the kind of, you know, there's like almost a template for a woman finds herself in the city, but she kind of brings this really fresh energy to it. And also, like you said, like she basically grabs you from the very first shot. Mm. Like the film is so great at showing what's unique about her, like. The very first shot is just this her with this like really piercing like stare with like the heterochromian eyes and stuff. Yeah. It's really striking. I think it like reuses a similar shot much later on as well. Mm.
The end.
Yeah, I didn't want to say. I guess that's not a spoiler, but
it's not.
I didn't want to just be like, and this is how it.
ends.
Well, there's no point saying it now, is there? You know how it ends.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone. Sorry, guys, don't go. Don't
you know, everything in between doesn't matter.
Nicely bookended. Film was nicely bookended. I guess we'd describe her as sort of a turbulent character with these kind of personality swings up and down. She changes so briskly so often. She's quite an interesting character to like follow for the whole film because she's so up and down. She's so different from each scene.
Yeah.
How she acts with people.
Yeah. You know, you're thrown into this world with her. You don't know, you know, where she's going to go next. She's unpredictable, and it's exciting and sometimes irritating. And I think that you feel what she feels, which I think the movie does really well. You know, it puts you in her world very well. And you also kind of go through, it grows on you. She grows on you as she kind of grows and gets to know herself, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, I think even though she makes some decisions, you're just kind of like, no, what are you doing? Yeah. Like you kind of go on that journey with her all the way. I think, yeah, because she is in every single scene,
yeah.
you get to know her a lot better, even though she's not always doing necessarily what you want her to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really great because her circumstances are so tenuous, and then the only thing that you know for sure about her is that she has this consistent ability to just make people uncomfortable or push them away, but whether or not she wants to, because she's got quite a spiky personality sometimes, for better and for worse, and it makes her really exciting to watch. But then it just makes things where she's interacting with someone who doesn't know her or understand her like we do, it makes it just unbearably tense, with her various employers, especially the ones who are a bit more tight, who are far more tightly wound than she is, because she's like this kind of freewheeling personality who adapts to a lot of really dire circumstances.
Yeah. So the sort of catalyst for the film is her breakup with her very kind of bourgeois boyfriend. And you think you get the impression that for the 10 years of their relationship, she was just kind of Joaquin's girl. Is that Joaquin?
Joaquin? Yeah, I think it's Joaquin.
Yeah.
Joaquin's girlfriend. That's kind of was her identity for those years. You know, she was his, he's a photographer, she was his muse. So she's kind of under pressure to pick her own identity, and she goes through many, many different identities, different guises in the film, almost in a kind of like a Tom Ripley sense. Not quite as a con artist, but just the way she's so chameleon-like and adaptable to so many different situations that she quickly turn it on.
Yeah, I mean, she even says it right in the beginning. Yeah. She's like, I adapt. Like, it doesn't matter what I do, I adapt. And I think that that's important because I think, you know, as a young woman or as a woman, you know, trying to find herself, I think she, as you said, I think her identity has been very tied up in this relationship because, I mean, you know, it's said that he was her professor. You know, she sort of dated him while she was still a child herself, or, you know, a young woman like coming into herself. And I think that this is like a weirdly, maybe a delayed coming of age story, you know, where this breakup happens and it sends her on this sort of journey. And she is kind of trying to find herself, but I don't think it's like a calculated thing that she tries to change her personalities. I just think it's like her one, like just trying to find where she fits in, you know, in these worlds.
Yeah, because she's kind of only, I guess, before we see her from this point, she's only built her personality around Joaquin as like a point of reference.
Yeah.
So I think, it's good to see. And I think as well, because, I mean, when you see films where it's like, I'm a male photographer or artist and this is my muse, and now you're seeing the other side of that, of the kind of the muse and how they actually maybe don't have as much personality because they've got somebody else projecting onto them.
Putting it like that, it kind of reminds me of Phantom Thread. Mm-hmm. Like this kind of this deconstruction of like the muse, and it shows how like kind of oppressive that like oppressive that like possessive term can be. So it's like you have to adhere to this image that a man like sets out for you, and it's really fascinating in both films to see the muse like take control of those circumstances for himself. Hers is like a big old just like middle finger up to Joaquin, whereas in I guess in Phantom Thread she uses those circumstances to her advantage instead. But
and it's interesting that the photo that's he's most well known for, she says at one point that he said that it's something about, I think, I don't remember the exact quote, but it's something about like, oh, I see the woman in you in this photo or something like that. Or it reminds me of like the woman I see you as, or the woman inside you or something like that. And she's like, gives him the middle finger and is like, well, I'm going to be my own woman. And I'm not just this object of your gaze.
It's quite funny that we get this message like pretty much exactly from her mouth, but it's not in like a go-girl like kind of way.
No,
it's
like
in this manic.
Yes, exactly. No, it's not a very. There's no clear way of going about it.
But that's what I like so much about it is that it's not. I remember Steph was saying to me when we saw it that it just takes a lot of these tropes of girl seeks identity in the city thing and just bypasses cliche, or at least like gives us those things but in a manner we don't entirely expect, like the stream of consciousness rant at her doctor, which is one of my favourite opening scenes yeah. I've seen this year. It's just wild. Like, you just kind of... It's crazy that she just starts from this peak
yeah.
of energy, and then the film... It's not like the film keeps that up, that tone up necessarily, but it just... You kind of think, like, where the hell is this going
yeah.
from this point? Because it starts just at 100.
It's the ground running, yeah. Yeah. yeah.
yeah. I guess, yeah, because I was thinking about a lot of... I don't want to, like, talk about a lot of points and spoil the movie, but kind yeah, of things yeah. that, like, a lot of women go through in movies, but it kind of doesn't really put a lot of focus on those points. It's just kind of like, oh, well, that's life and I'm going to deal with it, and then they could just kind of go through it. And I think that's nice because it doesn't kind of frame her life as, like, well, you're a woman and yeah. you have to make these points really kind of big things about your life, and she's just kind of dealing with them.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Yeah. The film is just like, this is a real person and she happens to be a woman, and this is her. This yeah. is how she lives in the world, you know?
Yeah. I like that. And kind of ordinary as well. I quite like this thing at the moment of kind of average women. Mm. So, like, in Lady Bird as well, where she doesn't yeah. have good grades and she's not, like, particularly fantastic at anything. And, like, it's kind of the same with Paula, in that she's not kind of somebody that you might aspire to be, and she's not kind of mysterious, fantastic woman. She's just kind of going through life ordinary, and I think you can maybe relate to that a bit yeah. more as somebody who has a lot of flaws. And
it's nice that the film doesn't really like position her as being like part of a big message.
Yeah.
it just kind of lets her be. With things that you're saying, where things that happened like specifically to women, it's quite funny that I like the film's matter-of-factness in the editing, and that, like, it knows what the audience expects from things, and it'll just be like, well, you know what's happening, cut.
Yeah.
yeah.
It moves on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't linger on anything too long. It doesn't outstay its welcome.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
It doesn't treat you like a fool or like, kind of wallow in any yeah. melodrama that the circumstance might bring. It's just, yeah, like you said, it was just, like, it's very much that's life.
Mm. I think a lot of people have compared this to Frances Ha, in a way, and it's very, you spoke about it earlier, this kind of Woman in the City finds herself film. Yeah. Did you get that comparison, or is that superficial?
I get that comparison. It's quite funny because I've seen it brought up in a number of reviews and even yeah. in an interview with Dosh and
Sarai.
Oh,
I think we're going with Sarai.
Yes. Okay, Sarai. the comparison to Frances Ha has come up a number of times, and it's quite interesting because the two of them almost reject that in this interview. I think it was with The Guardian. And they say, like, I don't like that film. It's wrapped up too nicely. And then Sarai compares how they got Dosh to prepare for her character to how David Thewlis does for Naked by Mike Lee.
Yeah.
And then it's quite funny because I have seen before in a review of Frances Ha this exact same comparison made between David Thewlis and Greta yeah. Gerwig. So, like, this kind of solipsistic type, even though they're very different characters,
yeah.
like all three are very different
yeah,
characters,
absolutely.
It's just there's that kind of thread between all of them, which I thought was really interesting. As for Frances Ha, though, it's like if things just, I guess this is that, if it did, things didn't work out, everyone around her
yeah.
kind of sucked, not in a twee kind of way, but in a really just sometimes dangerous kind of way. People are terrible. It's not like Adam Driver wearing a bad hat.
yeah.
I like Frances Ha, disclaimer.
yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So the city of the film is Paris, and Paula says to someone at some point in the film, Paris is a city that doesn't love its people. So I wanted to get your thoughts on what this film is saying. Is it from about Paris? Is it from about cities in general? Have you all, you know, we all are young people living in London. Have we felt that about this city, that, you know, sort of experienced the highs and lows of living in a big city? So what kind of city is the film depicting?
I guess one where everyone's just doing their own thing. I mean, a lot of the time, I guess, staying in, well, being around London, you just kind of see that everyone's in a rush and you kind of disappear.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting because I was thinking about it. You know, she meets the Osman, the security guard, and when they first meet, he speaks a little bit about, that's where she says that, you know, Paris dislikes its people. And he said that he says that he likes the city because he feels incognito, you know, that he can kind of do what he wants and be who he wants to be, which is kind of this, like, in a city like Paris, and I feel like in London as well, it is kind of like a blank slate where you can kind of create whoever you want to. No one knows you, no one cares about you in the real sense of the word, and like you can kind of be who you want to be. And I feel like, I mean, I guess that's just a good backdrop for this kind of a movie where she's trying to find herself, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, along the way, she talks to people and it comes up that people don't remember her or recognize her. Or she says, like, you know, I don't think I'm very memorable, or, you know, you're someone I'd recognize in the street, but I don't think people see me like that, you know. And it's kind of just reflective of her, I don't know, her psyche or the way that she's, you know.
That's so interesting how it's. She's conflicting with her desire to, like, just have the ability to create a new identity for herself entirely, but then also struggles with not wanting to be forgotten, especially with her, like, repeated, like, contact with Joachim as well throughout the film. It's like a reminder that she's doing, like, I'm doing great. Like, I don't need you.
Yeah, or in the whole immortalization of her in the image, you know, kind of like being remembered like that, but like not necessarily in her own, so I think that's an interesting question. I like that sort of interplay between, like, how people and, you know, generally are in cities, and how the city can sort of determine or have a play a role or influence your identity or how you interact with others.
How they shoot everything just really helps for that as well, because I feel like so loads of the shots just have Doge placed so well. Like, among some, even with, she always stands out, like, even among the shots where it'll just be, like, really far overhead and people are just kind of walking past her. Like, I just think this whole film is, like, really immaculately framed, and I really love it. All the, like, production design is really lovely as well. It's just immaculate in every shot, and it just feels like no matter how kind of wide the scope of everything is, it just always feels like Paula is at the center of it, which is just really nice. Without, like, kind of obviously being that way, I just really love that element of it, and it kind of, I guess, it ties into how she is trying to stand out among all of these people in the city, because there's a lot of the time it kind of feels like a lot of the work's just kind of like janky and handheld as she's kind of rushing around, but I just really love the moments where it just takes a moment to just stop and just kind of observe the character in any of these environments, whether it's just her, like, kind of chilling on a doorstep somewhere, or standing rather uncomfortably in her like family home and kind of letting the, like, mise-en-scene and her, like, do its thing. And this is what I was saying earlier, that, like, Doge is such a crucial part of the movie because she just does so much work in every shot.
Yeah. From what I remembered, there wasn't many establishing shots, really.
Yeah, just sort of throws you in there, like, exactly like how the opening scene does. It's just like, bam, this is this chick. You're like, whoa, okay, I'm going to... Yeah, exactly. And I also like that. I quite like having to figure out where they are or, like, what's happening, because if you feel closer to the character, I guess. I really also just really like this film, like, formally, like, the cinematography, the production design, also the colors, like, what the colors are doing with her sort of emotional states throughout the film is great.
Everything just looks so great against all her red hair as well, just thinking of that shot when she's, like, doing a job interview and she has that, like, blue jumper and all the hair just it just looks amazing. It's just so bright.
The poster, isn't it? Well, one of the posters is the one. I was actually going to ask you about the you said something about the other French title the other day with being very specific.
It's a train station, I think, in Paris.
It's Montparnasse Bienvenue. I think is it a train station? I think that's the international title.
It's quite funny, like, thinking about that, and that there's, like, no establishing shots.
It's quite funny, isn't it, because I guess it's like you'd expect it to have a lot of kind of "this is Paris, we're here" kind of shots, but it doesn't.
There's no one just being like, "ah, oh, the area of Montparnasse."
What a lovely day in Montparnasse.
Yeah.
I'm just a young woman out in the city. Jeune femme.
Hello, my name is Jeune Femme.
Yeah, no, it's nice that it's never like kind of on the nose like that. Mm. And also, speaking of that, there's not really, well, you were talking about its form as well, there's not really any non-diegetic music in it as well. Like, all I can think of is when she hits the club and there's just like kind of just booming electronica, and that's mostly it. There are, my memory's failing me at the moment, but I think there are maybe a couple of instances of a score.
And there's like a jazzy piece that happens at some stage.
Yeah.
But it is kind of like, most of it happens within.
It always feels really, it feels really particular. Like, she chooses, like, Sarai chooses those moments, like, really well, I think.
Mm.
And just so when it happens, when she kind of goes into the club, everything's just really disorientating, and you're just kind of, suddenly, goes from being a film just centered around Doshi's, like, kind of really fast wit, and then it's just her, just like drowned out in this really loud, crowded club, with some dude saying that he likes how she's crying or something.
There's like loads of images of men just like putting themselves over her, like all the way through, which I think was like a really interesting theme. I don't know if that's a theme, but kind of thing that was going on the way through.
I guess you can call it a theme, considering that the whole thing's about her trying to break out from under her. Ex-boyfriend's shadow.
That's a good point, actually. Mm. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Mm. It's true.
And I think a lot of people would expect this kind of film to be, you know, semi-autobiographical from the director's point of view, but she said it's not. She said that she's nothing like Paula, Leonor Sarai. She said that writing the film was more of a liberation, and that she's written a character who's completely opposite of herself. I think Gerwig said the same thing about Lady Bird, that it's not necessarily me, it's just kind of like a different version of me, rather than any kind of autobiographical. Yeah, and she worked hard to make sure the character wasn't, you know, wasn't too wacky, her words. So yeah, to kind of stop the comparisons to Frances Ha even more.
Yeah, she definitely has a spicy personality, but she, in the calmer moments, you sort of get to know her intimately, I think, and she is this. I think she's just a fully, like, a well-rounded character. You know, I believe that she is a human in the world, and I think that that's, you know, the point, that we're all complex, kind of have these moments of these facets of our personality that come out in different situations.
And I really love the scene where she goes for the job interview. They'll ask her, what's your biggest failing in life? She's like, oh, I'm just too organized, I just love being me.
And also
I'm also calm, I love organization, I'm calm. And like, you know, from what we've seen earlier, her sort of chain smoking squalor is where she feels most comfortable. I think that's one of the best scenes that just really sums up her character in a really nice, simple way.
And it does feel like something that she's read somewhere, like, you know, these answers are the best answers for that. Yeah. She's like, all right, I'll just go with that. Kind of want this job, so.
A lot of it feels like, kind of, if I was going to put it in reductive terms, like Frances Ha via Fleabag.
Yeah, Fleabag's a big one.
If we're going to go for like how they approach her character, I guess, because in Fleabag, there's a lot, it's all centered around Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character, and she's a mess.
I really like this kind of character arc that she goes through, and I like that the film isn't like plot pointed out in such a like clean and neat way, but you do see this trajectory of her, like, she grows up throughout the film, I think, and that's the main thing, is like when she gets like moments of responsibility, like this job, you know, which people are like, oh, it's just a job that I'm doing while I'm doing my master's or whatever it is. It's like she's starting to take life seriously, you know, a little bit, and you know, even with the babysitting, like, she just does it because she kind of needs a place to stay or whatever it is. But then she kind of it's about like investing, I guess, and like taking on, or just accepting that like this is part of like growing up and like finding out. You know, she takes her job quite seriously when she gets it, you know.
I should say I really like the way that it's structured, actually, because I think when it started, I was actually really uncomfortable because she's in like a actually really
manic,
manic and quite like dangerous position, because she kind of realizes that she has no one. And then I think it's really kind of nice that it's it's still kind of hanging by a thread a bit. Like, if she loses a job, then she's probably back in the position that she started in.
Yeah.
But you actually, yeah, start to feel more comfortable as she does as well. And kind of when she gets her life on track a little bit, it's, yeah, I just really like the way it kind of goes in like an upwards slope a little bit.
Yeah. And as we said, like, it doesn't, she's not an extraordinary woman. That's not like, you know, and it ends pretty, I mean, it's not like this amazing ending where, but it's kind of like, you know, if you have this feeling like she's going to be okay, you know?
Everything's like, going to be okay.
Everything's going to be all right.
All right, so that is Jeune Femme, which is out in cinemas and on Curzon Home Cinema this Friday. Also on Curzon Home Cinema is new documentary Film Worker, which is a documentary about Leon Vitali, who was an actor but gave up his acting career to become Stanley Kubrick's assistant. So definitely a big one for Kubrick fans. And if you have any thoughts on Jeune Femme, do let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com for next week's show, or reach us on Twitter. And if you are a fan of the show, subscribe, leave a review and comment. We're available every week on iTunes and Acast. So it's goodbye from Steph.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Cam.
Au revoir.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Adieu.
Goodbye.
See you, mate.
Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.